So what do you think of this net? You think this is big enough to...
What is that for? What are you doing?
Oh, I'm going to... well, some people go for the elusive Bigfoot. I'm hunting the elusive silver fox.
There's
only a couple out here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to see if I can trap one.
All right. Well, you got to, you got to find their hiding spots is what you got to do.
It's tricky.
I know.
Because, you know, you spot them and then they disappear.
Yeah, they're elusive.
They are.
Very elusive. Wait a minute. Hold on. We're rolling.
All right, let's roll. Well, my name is Rich.
And my name is Mark.
And we are two guys on Block Island.
What shall we do with Shark Sailor?
Welcome to another episode. We've got a guest this week that I've known for a long, long time, I think. Well, long time.
Long enough.
I don't know when you go to long, and then if you ever make it to long time.
We should all be so fortunate to make it that long.
But it's our friend Alan McKay is with us today to have a little conversation and maybe talk about days gone by.
As we hinted at in the beginning, in the intro of the episode.
Yeah. He's an attractive man.
We're checking boxes today because we've already had Mike Dugan, who is one of the two silver foxes. We've now finally can check the other box. Alan. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I'm not worthy.
The net wasn't big enough.
No. There's no net that can contain that silver fox.
No. Not going to happen. Well, Alan, we kick it off with a little, how'd you get here? When did it happen and what made you stay
Well, my father came out here when he was 16, crewing on a sword fishing boat out of Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Oh, really? And this was like a stopover spot for them?
Yeah, and that was in the early 40s, I think, and he really loved it. And so when he got married, my mother and he came out here for part of their honeymoon, and then we came out every summer when I was a kid growing up.
So there's a chance that you were here on that honeymoon starting.
My older brother.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, yeah,
and where,
I didn't know.
Where'd you grow up? Where were you from?
Newtown, Connecticut.
Oh, okay. All right. It's not too far away.
Yeah. Well, that goes back. See, right out of the gate. I've known this guy for a long time, and I never knew anything about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we...
So he was the old sight fishing, spear, harpooning. Sorry, harpoon.
Well, he was a teenager. Yeah, I think he did. He did the striking.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
But he only did it a couple of years while he was in school.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's good enough. And then you... Did they ever vacation here? Oh, yeah. So that's
and then eventually they bought a house here.
So every summer this was kind of your place where your family would come?
Yeah, for at least a couple of weeks every summer. And my mother was a teacher, so she had the summer off. And my father would come over on the daddy boat. About the daddy boat.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't even know any of this.
Where would you guys stay? Would you rent a house or hotels?
Different places. Mostly we rented houses. I remember... Some of my earliest memories were staying at the King's Spa one night because we got here on the Friday night and our rental wasn't available till Saturday. So I remember staying there.
What's the King's Spa?
It's currently the building across the street from the movie theater. I don't even know what it is.
The Block Island Inn. I think it was. Recently?
Yeah, the Block Island Inn.
Block Island Inn.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and it's got the Kai. Shop down below.
Okay.
But, and why was it called King Spa? Was it the guy's name? King
Odell, yeah.
King Odell.
Yeah.
Who was a companion of Eleanor Motts, right?
At one point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I just remember as a kid, we loved it because we were only there the one night, but they had the ice cream place in the first floor.
Oh, that's right. It was like an old school soda fountain, if I remember right. Yeah.
And we would just go down there and charge it to the room. So,
oh wow, fancy!
But it was living high on the hog.
The one night, you know,
yeah.
Was that the ice cream spot where the ice cream spot used to be? That closed the one in the back that overlooked.
No,
right,
no,
right in the main. That was a drugstore.
It was like a drugstore. Even I think when I was really little, it was still there. You know, but it was a fountain. You set up the stools, and you know they would
cool.
You make your root beer float.
Yeah.
So then you would, of course, go to the house that you rented out in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, dang, I want some ice cream.
I mean, some of the places that I remember I showed Norris a picture of that little cottage behind the Dewey.
Dewey Cottage. You got to help me out. I'm sorry.
You know, from Nick's, you'd go up Dewey's right next to Nick's, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a big marsh in between. But
and there was like a smaller cottage behind
the cottage
Dewey?
In the back.
And, oh, yeah.
I remember renting that place. So I had a picture from when I was about yay big.
Really?
And then I remember the tiny barb cottages.
Oh, right over here, other side of the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were places up on Sunset Hill that were friends of my mother's. The woman that owned it was a teacher as well. They worked together. So I remember staying there.
What are the tiny barbs like inside? Going back to that real quick.
God, I have no recollection.
None? Okay. No. I guess I could always just ask and probably go in and look. But those are originally...
I would love to see them again myself.
Yeah, well, let's make a field trip. Yeah. All right, pack it up. Pack up the equipment.
Wait, they're still there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so when they... they were going to develop, what's the etiquettely named, now it's called, down the neck. We always called it cutting cottages, but,
cutting cottages.
It was cutting cottages down the neck right.
Oh.
But of course there was a big stigma with it being a big development at that time when they were building these big things, but those footprints all existed as little tiny cottages and they're all over the island. You as you drive around,
the tiny barb or.
Oh, they're not
long before that.
Oh, really? So yeah, much. So
I was
much for what I know.
When we stayed in those, I was.
Oh, okay.
I was probably 5 or 6.
So I take back everything I just said.
Yeah,
but there is one down here in my corner. My neighbor has one down there
on Riker's old property.
On yep.
Oh, so they picked them up and just moved them around.
Yeah, so you could have a cottage.
There's a couple at the Abrams farm.
Yep.
That they renovated.
They repurposed.
Animal. Oh, really?
Yeah, they repurposed most of them.
Yeah.
I always thought that the tiny barbs were...
definitely just there built, when I was built. Young. Yeah.
Wow. I have no idea how old you are, so how do I know?
Fox never reveals
it. It was more than 60 years ago that I stayed there. So.
Oh, okay. We can do some of that.
We'll do
Matt.
That. Well, that's okay.
Got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what did you used to do out here when you were a kid on vacation?
You know, a lot of time at the beach and just swimming and clamming and playing around, boating. I remember staying at the Narragansett, too, when we were pretty young. And they had a dock out behind there at the time, next to where Payne's is, you know. And they had boats available for the guests. And I remember taking a boat out, rowing way out and not being able to. Well, it was all I could do to get back in. It was,
yeah.
I was a little nervous.
But. Oh, so they let you grab a boat and row around?
Yeah, they had several boats available.
The pre-kayak days.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Doing it real.
And, you know, I remember another early memory from that time was we were checked out of wherever we were staying, which I think was on High Street. And back where the Nature Conservancy building is.
Yep.
There was a building back there that my parents rented, I remember. Anyway, we checked out, and the car was all packed, our station wagon, you know. And it was just myself and my two older brothers. And there was an auction on the front lawn of the Harbor Baptist Church. It was the contents of the attic at the Shamrock building. Do you remember that building?
No. There was an old hotel out here, though?
It was an annex to the Ocean View.
Okay.
And it was kind of where the post office is now. It was on that property anyway.
Okay, yeah.
So they had the contents of the attic. They were getting ready to tear the building down. And, actually, it wasn't tearing it down. I don't remember why they were having the auction, but anyway, they had an old steamer trunk there that my brothers and I were convinced was a pirate's chest. So we forced my father to buy it, you know, and he got it for like $2.50. And my mother was mad because there's no room in the car. The car was fully packed. We had to lash it onto the roof of the car. And when we got it home, there were all these letters in there from Civil War.
So there was actually content in the chest.
Oh, yeah, that nobody ever looked at, but there were letters from generals on both sides of the Civil War.
Really?
Wow.
Writing to this guy, Jeremiah Torgy, who owned the house where Janice Rutan lives, who, I'm trying to think who owns it now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So you found all these letters?
Yeah, they were trying to organize a reunion of the Second Battle of Manassas. And wow. He was writing to these generals on both sides of the war. He had been a major in the Union Army. And my mother did a lot of research on him. He was the nephew of Cassius Clay Ball, I believe.
Okay.
And he owned that house. He lived in Norwich, Connecticut, otherwise. But, yeah, there were all these letters. And my father wrote a letter. I had this conversation with Ben Ruska recently because he wrote an article about finding my father's letter, offering those letters to the Historical Society way back then, and never heard back from anybody.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you still have the letters?
No, my father eventually sold them many years later, and I think he sold them through Skinner's in Boston for about $15,000 or $20,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you get a cut of this $2.50 investment?
Seriously, your mom? Did your mom ever apologize for being angry with the kid, the boys?
I got to keep the steamer trunk.
Well,
do you still have that?
No. Yeah. But
you got your $2 back for it, though.
That's a pretty good investment.
Wow.
Wow.
That's like an Antiques Roadshow story.
I thought for sure you were just going to say there's nothing in it but cobwebs. That's pretty wild.
No, it was fun little adventure. Yeah. I still have, or I think my brother does, my younger brother, has copies of the letters.
Okay.
Photocopies.
Pretty cool. Wow. And this was, he was writing from Block Island to these generals?
Or Norwich.
And this was after the war.
Yeah, it was.
So it was trying after to just the war. Get I don't them remember together.
I don't remember what the anniversary, what year it was, but that was the point of the reunion.
And they were trying to get generals from people from both sides.
Yeah. The letters were, I mean, there were some big names in the letters, you know.
Wow.
On both sides.
Huh.
I wonder if the reunion ever happened.
Yeah, I wonder too. I really don't know.
Should have read the letters.
They were difficult to read.
Oh, I bet.
Old school cursive, but also, you know, at my young age, I was like, just the style was very different than the way we would write a letter now.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I'd like to look at them again, the copies.
Yeah.
I actually asked my brother to see if he could find them because I told Ben I would try to get him a look at them.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. That's a good find. That really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Not what I was expecting.
And so then you start getting a little older. You're out here. Did you keep coming out through, you know, like your teenage years?
Oh, yeah.
And then did you ever work out here during the summers?
I did. I worked.
When was your first full summer out here?
I remember working at the snack bar at Champlin's for Peter Filippi, the brother, not the son. And that was an adventure.
Okay. Would you care to
whose brother was Peter? That was
Paul's brother.
Paul's senior's brother was Peter.
Right.
Okay.
And he had a snack bar where?
Right on the behind the pool. It was the restaurant is still there now.
Yeah.
But that's a much bigger operation than what was there. It was just a tiny little snack bar.
Yeah.
And wow. I remember I was about 12 years old and I came out here with the guy who's still my best friend, we're both working there. And I remember this guy came in on a Sunday. And, you know, I didn't know any better then, but now I would tell you that the guy was clearly hungover. And he was looking for a Bloody Mary. And Peter Filippi said, make this guy a Bloody Mary. Well, we're looking at each other like, how do you make a Bloody Mary? So my friend... he knows there's vodka in it, and he puts some vodka in the glass, ice in the glass. And then he finds like an industrial-sized bottle of Tabasco sauce, and he fills it up.
Oh, my God. That'll cure your hangover.
Well, he gave it to the guy. The guy took one big sip and ran out and threw up.
Oh. And then he comes in and goes, the best Bloody Mary I've ever had.
What, no celery? Yeah. Oh, my God.
But we were just like washing dishes, basically, otherwise, you know.
Yeah, just keeping it tidy.
And you were 12?
12, 13, yeah.
So that you weren't here for the whole summer at that point.
I was.
Oh, you were?
Oh, that's that's when your parents bought a place and you
could. No, I was in the employee housing. There was a.
At like 12 or 13?
A bunkhouse, yeah.
Wait a minute. So your parents just let you come out here by yourself at 12 or 13?
I might not have told them. I don't know.
They weren't like, where's Alan? Has anybody seen Alan?
There were enough other kids around the house.
Really? Yeah. Come on. I'm not buying it.
Did
you really?
No, we were raised by wolves.
Okay. Yeah. That well explains the foxes, silver or foxes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Wow. So did you keep coming out here summer after summer since
I was out here most every summer when I was growing up.
What other jobs did you have?
I worked there, and I got fired from... Oh, no, I worked at Pier 76, the restaurant there.
Right.
Which restaurant is that?
It's the hotel now.
Yeah, it's a hotel.
Yeah. At Champlin's.
Oh.
At the Circle. Champlin's. You know, gotcha, if you go around the Circle, building.
Okay.
And that explains why when Ballard's burned down, they kind of moved Ballard's to that building. Exactly. For that one summer while they rebuilt.
Yeah.
Because so his brother let him use his restaurant.
Yeah, so I was working there, and then I got fired by Paul Filippi because he told me he wanted me to work at Ballard's. And I said I didn't want to work there. So I don't know. I knew the people I was working with. I didn't want to move on.
Yeah. You're happy where you are.
And that was it? And so he said, well, then you don't work here either.
He specifically said, pack up your shit and screw, get off my island.
Wow. Get off my island.
That's what he said. And you're like, that's okay, I got to go to high school anyway.
No, I said, this is, you don't own the whole island.
What'd you do after that?
Pack up after your shit after and you got, screw. Yeah,
get off my island. What'd you do after that you got fired?
God, you know, I don't really remember.
Yeah.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, the other summers I don't remember doing much work until I moved out here.
Okay, so you're just kind of goofing around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then when did you...
We did some camping out here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, illegally, obviously.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Half the people that come on this podcast have done it. Yeah. Slept in the dunes, slept on the beach, slept in a van, slept, you know, so...
Back to the Shamrock, I remember we used to sleep up at the old Ocean View property, and we would store our camping gear under the... porch of the Shamrock during the day. And this one night we came back. I'm thinking we were probably 16 or 17 at the time, but didn't have any trouble getting served at the Kittens.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So we came back and it was again the same fellow, my friend, and we decided just as a joke we rolled out our sleeping bags on the front lawn of the Harbor Church. I'm sleeping here, and sure enough, we both fell asleep.
And nobody moved you or bothered you?
Vin Macklin kicked me the first thing in the morning, get up.
Yeah. He was the chief?
Yeah, he was the chief of police. There.
Did you know him at that point, or that's how you
met
him?
That's the first time I remember meeting him. And, you know, I joke with him about it now because he was very nice about the whole thing. He said, he took us up to the police station, he confiscated all our camping stuff, and which didn't amount to much, but he said, have a great day. Go out, have fun. Last boat back to New London is 3 o'clock. Come up here at 2:30. I'll drive you down there. You can have your gear back. And so we did that, and he drove us down there. As soon as he opened the trunk, we grabbed our stuff, and we ran like hell. And we stayed for another 2 weeks, and he chased us every time he saw us.
Wait, did you pretend to get on the boat and then run off the boat? You just grabbed your stuff and ran?
As soon as the trunk opened, we grabbed our stuff. First chance we had, we got on.
Oh, my gosh. And who was your partner in crime on this?
A fellow named Richard Bradford. He was out here for a while. I don't know if you remember him. Red-headed guy. He worked out here with me, and he worked with Norris when we did the Dewey Cottage over. And I'm trying to think. Oh, he did when we started the old bowling alley. He worked on that crew as well.
So here we go. So, but any more before you get into construction or become a carpenter, shall I say?
Yeah, I'm only doing that till I figure out what I. Yeah. I want to be when I grow up.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Before we go on, so how did those 2 weeks go? Did you bump into Vin McLuhan again after that?
We would see him. He would chase us, but...
You always got away.
He never caught us. And we finally saw him when we were ready to leave.
He probably didn't want to get out of the car and chase you.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Oh, that's funny.
Wow. Now that last boat, boys, you're going to grab your stuff and get on that boat. Sure.
I'm going to probably hear from him now.
You what?
I'll hear from him now.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
So then what, when did you guys move? When did Block Island become your home?
78, I moved out here.
All right.
Full time.
Okay.
And I was living in Los Angeles before that for 2 years or so, and then
what were you doing in LA?
Doing carpentry and
staying warm.
The last job I had there was working for this decorator. My friend Dick's stepfather got us this job. It was at Gore Vidal's house.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And the woman who was the decorator she was from England, and we had such a great time with her. She invited us to go over and work with her over there. So when I came back from London, I came out here. It was right after that.
Wow.
So you did such a job in L.A. that brought you to England?
It wasn't the quality of the work.
It was just the companion.
We had so much fun working. Yeah. We were young. We were
and that's half the battle. Ten people can do it good as you. It's who do you want to be around? You know? That's really the...
This was like the mid-70s.
Yeah. In L.A., I was in... Mid-70s.
Mid-70s and then London. That must have been
wild. I was
only
in London for maybe 3 months, something like that.
Still, that's kind of a cool experience when you're...
Yeah, it was fun. We met some interesting folks there as well.
I bet.
So then you come back and you decide this is the place to be, or you...
I don't remember making that decision.
Yeah, I was going to say. You kind of said, what's
just
next?
A bunch of missed boats.
It's just a bunch of missed boats.
It's an extension of 2 weeks of my camping stuff.
Life is just a series of missed boats.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I hear you there.
But that was, I think, maybe the first job I did out here was working on that, on the bowling alley. I can't remember.
Okay, so... The bowling alley being in the Seacrest.
Yeah.
So we were just, we've had this conversation with some other people. So that went in that late?
That was, that might have been a few years after I moved here. I think it was. So I don't remember what I was doing. I worked
a couple of different jobs.
I worked with Bill Transu for a bit.
And it was a business idea, I guess, to actually open a bowling alley and try to make money, or was it more like community service?
It was closed. It had been closed for a long time.
Oh, you didn't work on making the bowling alley. Now I'm clear. No. You worked on the renovation to turn it into
the Seacrest.
The Seacrest. Okay. Now that makes sense.
So that was for the John DeTraglia.
Yeah.
John Arita.
I think mostly we were dealing with the daughter, Jennifer.
Okay.
Dave Milner.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So I was trying to recount where the bowling alleys landed atop of bars and tables.
Nick ended up with a bunch of it.
Okay.
But he also had another source, so it got mixed around. But I think Lou got some of it down at
Sam Peckham's.
Peckham's, yeah.
And then did they move some of that from Peckham's bar when they to build the Albion?
They may have. I don't know. Or there might have been additional stuff in storage.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
And what about the beachhead? Did they have some too at the time? If I remember Peggy, I thought she had some. I remember.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she did.
Okay. Because I know anything Ronnie Aubett was involved with seemed to have a bowling alley piece in it. So, yeah. Did you ever meet Ronnie, Mark?
No.
Oh, my.
No.
That was the crew.
We'll get there.
That was the crew. It was Dick Sheridan. Do you remember Dick?
Nope.
He was the maintenance guy at the Harborside.
Okay.
And he was a funny guy. So it was his job, essentially. And then it was Ronnie Aubett, myself, Dick Bradford. And in the winter that we did that, it was Rodrigo that had Skipper Roos, which was the beachhead.
Skipper Roos.
Which became the beachhead, I mean. But he worked as a laborer. So.
While he owned the beachhead.
Yeah, because it was wintertime.
Was the beachhead even open in the winter back then?
Yeah, it was open, but you know, he didn't have to be there during the day. There was nothing going on during the day.
Rodrigo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Only one? I think the best story about Rodrigo was, none of us had any money back then. So it hasn't really changed that much, but yeah. Jack Savoy, there was a Wagoneer for sale and he had no money and he wanted this Wagoneer. And we ran tabs there, and Friday we'd come in and pay our tabs, and it worked great. So he comes in one Friday to get his tab, and it was like $1,200. He goes, oh my God, I knew I drank a lot this week, but had no idea. And Rodrigo hands him the keys. He just said, you pay me when you can.
He put the Wagoneer on his tab.
Yeah.
Put it on my tab. Oh, that's the good old days right there. Yeah. Here, you take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Put it on my tab.
Yeah. Put it on my tab. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, he had no idea that he'd done that.
Yeah.
But wait,
Rodrigo knew he wanted it.
He made the deal to buy the car when he was drunk at the bar.
Rodrigo just did it.
Yeah.
He just did it.
Rodrigo just knew he wanted the car. And he's like, well, he's got a tab already anyway. I'll throw the extra, you know, $900 on there for the car. And,
yeah, exactly.
Wow. Oh, man.
Yeah. So Rodrigo owned the old school beachhead before it became, but then Peggy Manley bought it and ran it pretty similar. You know, it wasn't.
Well, she did all those renovations. So she was the one that moved the bar to the front, which made a whole lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the windows and the fishbowl.
Do you remember Sticky Chins?
No.
That was in the parking lot there?
No.
It was like a rib joint and barbecue place.
No.
Called Sticky Chins.
Really? Sticky Chins. Yeah.
In the parking lot of the beachhead?
Yeah.
No kidding. Was it like a food truck?
It was just a little shack. They slammed together with plywood and, you know, the food was actually pretty good.
How long was that there for?
I think only 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Most restaurants are.
Yeah. Jack Savoy had the sign from there because he got it, of course, from Peggy.
And what was it called? Sticky
Chins.
Sticky Chins?
Chins.
Sticky Chins. Oh. I love learning stuff.
Yeah, I always wish that he told me he had that sign. And I said, oh, I really want to get it because it was my friend Dick Bradford that did the restaurant. And it was the sign was just him flipping a cow on. You know, somebody had drawn it. I wanted to get it and give it to him. You know?
Oh, my God.
Got a big kick out of it.
The Block Island Barbecue. That might be the last barbecue restaurant on this island. I haven't. Well, I guess Ross and down the Poor People's Pub, they're starting to do some smoking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I never even knew there was a barbecue restaurant out here.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Well, it didn't last, like I said.
Yeah. Well, most restaurants don't, you know, that's it. They all seem great on paper. You know, but then when you try to get into it, it's not as fun as it seems.
Yeah. A lot of people are like, oh, I think I'll open a restaurant. That seems like an easy, good idea. Where were you living? Were you bouncing around at this point, like from like doing the shuffle, or did you have a steady place to live by now?
At that point, my parents had a house here.
So. Oh, they did?
Yeah.
When did your parents buy a house? Ish.
Nobody
right
checks
around,
up.
Right around the time that I moved out here.
Right around mid, so 70s some point.
Yeah, okay. Unfortunately, my mother died just before the closing, so.
Oh, no.
Really?
Yeah, and she was the one that always wanted the house out here.
Oh, no, you got to be kidding.
So it was a little.
That's some dumb luck right there. Oh, man.
Jeez. But anyway, that's where I lived. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And at that point, you were year-round at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was your father out here year round too? Or
no.
So he was back and forth still working on the mainland or just other doing?
He actually at that point was living, he had moved to, took a job in Summit, New Jersey, I think.
Okay.
So he was quite a ways away and he had a boat though that he would bring out here in the summer. And
gotcha.
Any of your brother, you had two brothers you said?
I had three brothers.
Three brothers.
And one sister.
And one sister.
You don't remember my sister Bonnie?
You know, you're not here to test my memory, okay? it rings a bell.
That's good. She came out here. She graduated from college and took her first teaching job out here. So she taught out here for, I don't know, 3 years maybe? 3, 4? I don't know.
Okay. I don't know if I remember. Especially, it depends on the year. You know, there was a small window where you may have been like legal to go out and drink, and
I'm going to ask this question to Mark. I know he doesn't know the answer, but you can listen and you can, if you know it,
I'll put my
you
hand.
You can
up.
Answer.
Okay.
Do you remember Chris Popper?
Nope.
Nope.
Oh, he managed the National when it was early during the, after it was renovated.
The manager I remember from the National was a guy named Ed. We used to play poker up on the third floor in the winter. It was like Ed McGovern and myself and the manager.
Yeah, I vaguely remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember if he was before or after Chris. But anyway, that's my. He went off to Bangor, Maine, and my sister followed him up there.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
So then you were the lone that's McKay.
What I was going to say. So did you have the house to yourself most of the time, or did you... I mean, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
My friend Dick Bradford was out here. He lived there for a while.
Well, nice of you to share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, my family would gather here for the holidays and stuff. So.
Oh, really? Like Christmas and things?
Christmas and Thanksgiving, yeah.
Wow. That's that time, that was not a big thing to come out to Block Island in the middle of the winter for Christmas.
No.
You know?
Yeah, you really kind of had to want it to come out. Yeah, there's
it had to mean something.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
It was kind of the most central location for everyone, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Oh, right, because you had family in Maine, Bangor, Jersey.
Maine and Jersey,
Boston. And so.
That's funny. You never hear of Block Island as being the most convenient place for people to get together.
Yeah. Usually it's like you send out the wedding invitations. Everyone's like, oh, no.
Oh, God.
We got to get there.
Yeah.
Where are we going to stay? So then you touched on it, but you eventually became a carpenter. But you're still trying to figure out what you want to do after that. But
yeah, I mean I had done that before.
Yeah,
before I came here.
Has that been your main thing ever? Pretty much, you know, for a while now
on the island.
Yeah, pretty much.
I ran the Seabreeze Inn for a couple of years, but I still did carpentry in the off season.
Okay.
And I went to a boat building school, but I found that it's a tough way to make a living.
I was going to, it's, you know, you've got to really be passionate to enjoy that. I mean, have you built any boats?
I've done a lot of repair stuff, but I've never.
Okay.
I've built a couple of boats, but early on and never since. So.
And then who were some of the crews that you worked with as your.
It was most of the time I don't. Worked with Norris almost exclusively,
and then, you know, unfortunately we lost Norris not too long ago, I'm assuming you're good friends. I'm sorry about that. But then you actually finished a project that you started with him, right?
He lied to me. He told me he had one house left in him and he asked me to come and help him do it, and I ended up having to finish it, but
that was a good lie.
Yeah. No, I was glad to.
How many houses would you have said you've built with Norris over the years?
Geez, you know, I wouldn't even be able to venture a guess, but I drive around and I'm always surprised when I look at and go, oh, I worked on that house, I worked on that house, I worked on. And in fact, right now I'm working on a house that Norris built 30 years ago that we're doing an addition to. And
it was a house you also worked on?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's actually an old friend of mine from high school.
So no kidding. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Returning to the scene. I one of the jokes I make to myself is I know I'm getting old when I see them redoing the roof for the second or third time in my life. I feel like, I feel like they just did that. I guess it was 30 years ago.
I got a kick out of somebody. I forget who it was. We're tearing up a wood roof, and they came across a shingle that Bill Carey and I had written our names on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with the date and
so in
ridiculous message. I know.
In Bill's, and for you listeners, Bill passed away, but he was, my in-law.
Yeah.
You know, his son married my daughter, Madison. So when he started out, that was in the early days for him before he had his own.
Yeah. I remember when he first came out here, he and I became friends right away, and I had a lot of fun with Bill, but. At that time, he and I were both working for Bob Koster.
Okay.
So I don't remember what the year that was, but it was the Cassidy House way down the neck. Nice people, nice job. But I just remember when Bill first came out, living in his car with his dog.
No.
Mace. Oh, my God. We had so much fun. And the Monday night club, he would pop into there when I was tending bar.
Oh, you tended bar at the Monday Night Club?
Oh, yeah. Don't you? Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I warned him that, you know, we're all interested in Alan, but we also want to hear some good stories.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break and check in with our sponsors, and then let's hear let's some
delve
others.
Into the
is that cool?
Bartending day. Yeah. Okay. I'm ready. All right. We'll be right back with more stories with Alan. Hang in there.
Rich, what are you doing? Are you okay? Do you have a spasm in your leg or something?
Oh, no, man. I'm practicing my dance moves. I mean, I think this one's called a running man.
I'm not sure what I'd call that. What's with the sudden urge to shake your booty?
Well, I'm going to Captain Nick's tonight, and I want to be ready for the dance floor.
Ah, I love Captain Nick's. It's been Block Island's premier live music venue since it opened in 1976.
Well, my favorite is disco night every Monday night.
Me too. The best part is that everyone gets dressed up in their best 70s attire.
Oh, it is definitely dressed to impress.
And then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, Captain Nick's features some of the best live entertainment you'll find on Block Island.
And Friday and Saturday night, they feature some of the favorite returning acts like Derek and the Funbags, West End Blend, The Blushing Brides. Love The Blushing Brides. Fever, Neil and the Vipers.
Yeah, and Friday and Saturday afternoons, if you want to get there a little early, Captain Nick's has acoustic entertainment on the deck.
And don't forget Sunday Funday with Young Guns, followed by more great live music inside.
Captain Nick's also has fantastic fun food options going all the way until 1 a.m. You know what that means? Late night food.
Yeah. And hey, if you're planning a special event, keep the party going at Nick's by renting out the second floor. It's perfect for wedding after parties, birthday gatherings, but just give them a call and you can reserve that for you and your friends.
Yeah, Captain Nick's also has a great selection of merchandise. You can pick up a cool hat, hoodie, or t-shirt.
Well, I hope to see you and all of our listeners down at Captain Nick's located on Ocean Avenue across from the grocery store.
For a complete entertainment schedule, please visit CaptainNicksBI.com. Hey, Rich, I've got some friends coming into town, and they're looking for a place to stay. Now, my friends are kind of hip and cool. I don't know if they're looking for just like, you know, your everyday typical thing.
Oh, send them to the Darius, man. That place is it's a hip, cool, renovated Victorian gem with an impeccable sense of style.
Oh my God, you're so right. I love Christy and Becca Zent. Those are the innkeepers, and they've got such a great eye for design.
Yeah, and talk about a location. Prime people watching on those street level decks.
Oh my God, so many shenanigans. But you know what? If you're not into shenanigans, there's some more private rooms that are more hidden away and a little more, you know, kind of if you're looking for something a little more intimate, I guess.
Yeah, and right around the backyard, you almost feel like you're in another world.
Yeah, totally. But it's also, the location is great because you're right near the ferries, shops, restaurants, the beaches. They're all only steps away.
And okay, breakfast. Let's talk awesome breakfast.
Amazing.
Right? Fresh and delicious every morning.
Yeah, I love it. And you know what it just dawned on me? The story of the Zent sisters and the Darius Inn is on season 1, episode 12 of our podcast.
Yeah, they were great guests. A lot of fun.
Totally.
So, hey, listen to the podcast to learn about them or check out their website, dariusblockisland.com.
Hey, Rich. I'm in training to swim from Block Island to Montauk, and I'm going to practice by swimming around the Great Salt Pond first. Can you follow me in a kayak?
Well, first of all, that's a terrible idea, and second, I don't have a kayak.
Well, why don't we head down to Fort Island Kayaks and we can rent one?
Hey, that's a good idea. Will they have one available, you think?
Absolutely. Fort Island Kayaks maintains a full fleet of single, double, and triple kayaks.
Oh, cool. Hey, maybe I'll rent a double and just kind of stretch out a bit.
Great idea. And look, if you don't want a kayak, you could also rent a paddleboard.
You know, I've always wanted to try that. Do you think they have one big enough for me?
Absolutely. They have a selection of paddleboards, all between 10 feet and 11 and a half feet.
Hmm. You know, I'm not a strong swimmer. I might be a little nervous.
Don't be. All of Fort Island Kayak's rentals come with life preservers, the proper safety equipment to make sure your afternoon on the pond is carefree.
Oh, okay. I feel better now. Hey, maybe I'll just stick with the kayak. I mean, how long do you think we'll be out for?
Well, I'm still working on my speed, but Fort Island Kayaks features rentals by the hour, half day, or full day.
Well, let's just rent one for the full day, just in case. I'll bring some sandwiches in case we get hungry.
Awesome. Let's head down to Fort Island Kayaks, located on Ocean Avenue, right by BI Fishworks. Call them at 401-466-5392, or you can check them out online at bifishworks.com. Hey, Rich.
Yeah?
Are there sharks in the Great Salt Pond?
You know, don't worry. If we see one, I'll just offer it a sandwich.
Hey, Rich.
What's going on?
I've got a lot of family coming out this summer to visit, and I want to keep them all in one place. You got any ideas?
Yeah, don't forget, our friends over at the Darius, they recently acquired Summer Hill. It's a large property on Connecticut Avenue, walking distance to town and the beach, but just outside the hustle and bustle.
Summer Hill has 10 bedrooms, 5.5 bathrooms, and a large farm-style kitchen. It's a turn-of-the-century building with that old-school Block Island charm that says, hey, they just don't make them like they used to, but it's being updated with that Darius signature style.
Summer Hill is being operated mostly as a weekly rental, with opportunities, though, in the shoulder season, you can do a 3 or 4 night rental. Summer Hill sleeps 20, so it's perfect for that large family gathering you're talking about.
And look, vacations are all about family and nostalgia. Everyone stays together, so you get the best of those late-night game sessions and early morning coffee chats. But it also has space for everyone to spread out with a huge yard and wraparound porch.
And that space makes it perfect for some small events, so give them a ring if you want to have a little wedding. They might be willing to do that there.
Reach out to the Darius at 401-466-2722 or at dariusblockisland.com.
And we're back again. A little more conversation with our friend Alan. Again, thanks, Alan, for taking time and coming and sitting with us. So we were about to delve into a bartending gig at the infamous Monday Nightclub. So yeah, go ahead.
Well, it starts with the working on the Seacrest.
Okay.
Because they were renovating the Monday Nightclub at the same time. And that's really when I really got to know Lou Gaffett.
Okay.
And the history of the Monday Nightclub, if you don't know it.
Bring it to us.
Hear it again.
It used to, it originated on the second floor of the Seacrest. What's the Seacrest now? But what was the bowling alley? And it goes back to the days when there was only one bar open in the winter.
Yep.
And they weren't open on Mondays. So they had this little informal gathering and people would bring whatever they wanted to drink and somebody would make a pot of stew or whatever the hell,
yeah,
whatever it was. And that was the Monday Nightclub. That's how it started. So when Lou decided to get into the bar business, the only thing available was a club license. So he started the Monday Nightclub in that little building. And again, that's when I first got to know him. And while they were renovating that and we were renovating the Seacrest, at the end of the day, you could go over there and long before it was finished, there was plenty to drink.
So, a work in progress. So
we would get to drinking with Lou. And after a while, I mean, he and I got along so well and he wanted, he asked me if I'd tend bar for him. I said, I don't know anything about tending bar. So he said, what goes into a beefeater and soda with lemon? Which, of course, was his drink. So I said, yeah. Beefeater, soda, lemon. He goes, you're hired.
That's it.
That was it. That was my job interview.
He sucked me into a little bartending, too, at the Albion.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know.
But, you know, it was mostly a shot in the beard place anyways.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. You're now making craft signature cocktails with infused, yeah.
In fact, yeah. I remember Lou, there was only one shift a day, Monday through, I guess, Sunday through Friday. Saturday, there were two shifts. And he would theoretically work the morning shift. I think he maybe did it twice. But I do remember hearing him say, because I would spell him 3 o'clock. I would come on at 3. And I remember hearing some woman order some fancy drink. And he said, we only serve 1-2 liquor drink here. And she said, what's that? And he said, shot and a beer. So, but, and, God, I remember he told me a story about being on the mainland. And he ran into this woman that worked for one of the liquor distributors. And she came out to Block Island on occasion. And he said, oh, well, next time you're out there, he says, I have a little bar out there. You stop in. She goes, oh, that'd be great. What bar is it? And he said, the Monday Nightclub. She said, absolutely no way. She said, that's the biggest pirate's den I've ever seen in my life. She said, everyone in there looked like they should have a knife between their teeth.
When a sales rep won't come in, you're doing something right. Like usually they're like beating on the door to get you to open early. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Was it that bad? I mean, was it like, I mean.
There were some unattractive people in there. There's no question about it.
You know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, but it was
ornery. I like the word ornery. Right.
Yeah, it was a fun place.
And was it predominantly guys hanging out, or did any of the women local, you know, guys?
There were a lot of women that came in, but okay. There weren't a lot of, you know, it was a private club, and technically you're supposed to be a member, but we never, it was nice to have the option if somebody came in.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, you know, I'd like to serve you,
but you're not
it's
a member.
Private club.
I kind of, I'm
That's
learning.
Actually, I'm learning. Yeah. Yeah, so, and if
long after he's gone, I'm still learning from Lou Gavitt. God, he was genius.
And if someone came in that wasn't a member, but you kind of like their vibe, you could always make them a member.
Yeah,
don't ask for their ID.
You know, most of the time we never enforced it.
Yeah,
but anybody could drink there, and so it was pretty fun. But
and who were the regulars?
I think there's a club license available right now.
Is there?
I don't think anybody every yeah, town has to offer one of every license. I think.
Yeah,
I mean license. that's how he got that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have one.
Yeah.
You have to have. I mean, you still have to follow in the guidance, but if nobody has it now, I think it's probably, we should get it. We should open up.
I'm good, man.
The Tuesday night club.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, it's members only though. It's different. It's a different vibe.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a different Pirates.
Okay.
Den.
All right. Mm-hmm. I'll bite. Yeah. Let's do it. So who are the regulars? Who are the fixtures like?
Oh man.
Without incriminating anyone. I think the statute of limitations is up.
Well, I was going to tell you a story about Bill. That's how.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That,
oh, okay. 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 Go for it. Yeah.
You know, again, Bill had no money. None of us had any money. But we used to play liar's poker there all the time with the dollar bills. And, my shift, the daily shift was 3 to 11. That's how long it was open. So I didn't see anybody from 3 to 5. So I'm in there looking through the bills.
Stacking the deck.
I hope the statute of limitations is up at this. I know there's one guy whose name will be mentioned who's not going to like this story, but I would put the good ones on the top and the bad ones on the bottom. And Bill would come in every day and he had the worst poker face in the world. He'd go, oh my God. But I'd give him the best ones, and I'd give Larry Rose the worst ones I could find. Larry Rose would lose $10 or $20, and he'd get so mad and he'd leave. And so it was a win-win for me. But I never told Bill. I never told him.
Oh, my God. Nope. That's hilarious. So he just thought he was a...
Lucky
man. Oh, little did he know his friend was hooking him up. Well, you can't tell, because with his poker face, he'd blow it, and then you'd have Larry walking in the door with a shotgun.
I remember another story with Larry. There was, you know, he and Lou were classmates. I think I could be wrong about this, but they may have been the class.
The two of them,
just the two of them.
Yeah, oh, but they were definitely classmates, and. Lou was in there one day, and Larry was sitting a couple stools down, and every other word out of his mouth was the F-bomb, and Lou never really cared for that language anyway, rarely used it.
A very gentlemanly, he held himself.
But particularly the fact that his daughter Kim was sitting next to him at the time, at some point he said, you know, Larry, you know I don't really care for that language, but... You know, my daughter's right here. I'd like you to try to clean it up a little bit. So Larry just sat there stewing for a couple of minutes, and then he just couldn't help himself. A couple of minutes later, he's back at it. Every other word, F that. So Lou said, all right, Larry. He said, look, I asked you nicely, and now I want you to leave. You're going to have to leave. So Larry's fuming, and he gets up and he said, if I were a little more sober, I'd invite you outside. And Lou said, well, Larry, you'll be sober someday. And then the best part of the story was, just as he's getting to the door, he says, oh, Larry, one more thing. Don't slam the door, okay? And oh, my God, I thought the building was coming down. But to this day, I could hear Lou's laugh. He just roared when he slammed that door.
Oh, Larry was is. I think Larry's still alive, I think. Yeah, in Florida. Yeah. He had a temper though. He was
sounds like
wasn't he also the one that I guess we could talk about this stuff. Isn't he the one that just got up from the beachhead bar, went outside and shot the deer in the parking lot?
Yes, he was.
Wait,
was
like, whoa,
goddamn deer.
Hold on a second. What?
Yeah, we're drinking at the beachhead and sees the deer.
And in fact, when Bobby died, that was the first time I'd seen Larry in a long time. And he never got out of the car. He was parked behind me. And they were doing the salute, the military salute. So they warned everybody that, you know, we're about to fire these blanks. So just so you know. And I turned around and I said to Larry, "You're not going to be shooting anything, are you?"
Yeah. He settled it with a shotgun. Yeah. No, right there in the parking lot.
That was that. He just walked outside and capped the deer.
I also remember one night he picked up a certain individual by the throat over a pool game. We were playing in a pool tournament in the old school beachhead pool tournaments, and he got so mad and he grabbed this, you know. But we'll discuss who that was later. They're still around. But I used to actually go over, and I don't know how I got into these little spots, but I used to go over a couple times a week and play Nintendo, the original Nintendo Mario Golf. Larry loved it. And we would sit in his living room and play video games. But I think I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. But we would literally sit there. Here's this grumpy old cuss of a man who would, you know, da-da-da. And he's like, "You like games? Come on over." And we did. And he showed me his pin. Larry was also a, he did the pigeon racing.
Oh, yeah.
He was pretty serious about that.
I just found out about this.
Yeah, yeah. He showed me all the coops and everything. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, in fact, I found a pigeon one time with a band on it. And I called him up, and he knew who owned it. So.
Yeah, they all know each other. Yeah. And so I didn't understand how it worked, but, you know, you basically pigeon in the box, and you ship it. And then it times it from they mark the release time and you mark the landing time and but pretty he was really into it.
Yeah.
This is a guy you would look at and never think that he was in, and he's petting the pigeons and to picture a guy petting a little bird and playing video games. I was like, "Oh man."
It's weird. It's very strange. I literally have never heard of pigeon racing before.
Yeah.
Four or 5 days ago on television, I don't know, some program popped up and it was, I'm like, "Oh, that's it was exactly what you just said."
And he used to keep him up in the we talked about it with somebody the right across from the when he lived right across from the entrance to the Atlantic Inn, right? Mm-hmm. He lived there and up in the upper loft, the barn upstairs was just all these cages with all these different varieties of pigeons.
Wow.
As far as I know, he still owns that house.
I would it was in his family for
I think he still owns it. Yeah. He was renting it for a long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So was the Monday Night Club your only bartending gig, or did you end up?
No, I went to the Peckhams after that.
Yeah.
More fun there.
Did you learn how to make a Bloody Mary eventually?
I learned a few tricks, but I couldn't do it. After a couple of years, it's just like everywhere I went, I felt like somebody was calling my name. What?
Yeah.
It's the one job I didn't, in owning a restaurant, I didn't. I could...
Plus, I think the other thing is you're dealing with the same people all the time, and some of them are not as pleasant as others.
Oh, yeah.
And you're trapped behind the bar. Like, you can't go anywhere.
That's right. If you're sitting next to them and they're not pleasant, you can walk out the door.
Yeah. If you're a server, you stop by their table, you chat, and then you got to go and leave. But when you're a bartender, you're just there.
I'll tell you a couple of funny stories with Lou down there. One was this guy, it also involves Bill. He was out here, and he was going to be building a couple of houses, and he wasn't making friends very fast. Bill didn't like him at all. And they were getting into it at Peckham's one night, and Lou was there. I was standing bar, and the guy said, "I'm going to be out here for, you better get used to me. I'm going to be out here for the next couple of years." And Lou said, "We'll decide how long you're going to be out here." And I don't think he made the winter.
Yeah. I worked, my only job doing carpentry was for Lou on the back buildings. Hated it. I couldn't do it.
Carpentry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, of course, I've been doing the lowliest man's job of, and I think Ronnie had me move a stack of like 200 2x4s. He had me move it like 3 times, and I don't know if it was on purpose, but Ronnie Aubit was quite a character.
Oh, yeah.
Big beard. middle of the winter. You'd be lucky if you had a shirt on. He'd be wearing the
flip-flops.
The coveralls and flip-flops in the middle of winter. He's another one, you know. This was his, he'd be like, I'll be right back. He'd go over to the edge of the third floor, take a leak off the top, you know, just standing there, and he'd be like, oh, look. He'd zip up, reach back for the gun, and take off and take out a deer. Like, sitting right there, like it was nothing. But I did enjoy Ronnie, though, you know.
I had fun with him, but he was, I didn't enjoy working with him.
Oh, yeah. No, me neither. No way. I felt like he was torturing me.
So there was another guy at Packham's, lived out here. His first, what was his name? I can't remember his name right off the top of my head. But anyway, he was having an issue with the town because he wasn't paying his wharfage down at the Old Harbor. And so he was down there one night, and he's going on and on about how he's going to sue the town because they were threatening to just cut his lines. And I'm going to sue the town. I'm going to sue the town. Finally, he says, his name was Jack something. He said, Jack, when you talk about suing the town, you're talking about that's me and that's Bill and that's Rich and that's Mark.
Yeah.
We're the town.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't care. He goes, I'm going to sue him. He goes, it's the American way. And Lou went over and grabbed him by the scruff of his neck and the back of his pants, and he marched him to the door, and he throws him out into the mud, and he goes, that's the American way.
Oh, my God. I cooked at Peckham's for a couple of winters, you know, with my off-season gig.
Yeah.
I tried a winter of doing nothing, and that was not very good or healthy. So I started working for Lou in the off season.
When I got here in 96, so I think, you know, the bar at Peckham's and the pool bar was still going until what, maybe 90, another year or two, 98, 99, 2000, whenever they turned it into the condos. But before that, like, what was the scene like at Peckham's? Was it like, was it busy? It was like one of the places.
Well, typical Lou. When he built that place, had the foundation, he boxed it over, he put rolled roofing over the box, and he finished the bar.
Yeah, first.
Before a single 2x4 went up in the air.
Well, you got to have your priorities straight.
It was.
And then he wondered for years why Mark gave him a hard time all the time. But the place was...
Oh, it's fun.
I'll tell you, yeah, Lou Gaff, Finn McAloon used to make a point of coming there anytime it rained. And he, because it just dripped through the roof. And he would walk up to the door carrying a raincoat, and he'd walk inside and he'd put it on. Every time it rained, you could count on Vin showing up.
I liked, I'm trying to think if I did two or three winters there, but Lou, I don't know, you know, some say it's because he wanted his own place to eat, others say because he was doing community service, but he was the early one to keep something open year-round. You could get dinner there seven nights a week all winter long, you know?
Yeah.
And some nights we'd open and I'd make 10 dinners, and other nights you'd get, you know, 25, 30 dinners. I would say it was almost like, I used to call it the unofficial town hall, because, you know, everybody would gather there. That's where the groundhog census took place every year.
Yeah.
And because there was a pool table, it was fun. I tried to tackle him one night.
Really?
Yeah.
Just for kicks, or were you guys getting into it over something?
Didn't work out well.
It didn't work out well. No.
Really?
No. No.
For who?
For me.
Really?
Well, it wasn't a big brawl or anything, but somewhere in the middle of the air, I got turned this way, and I caught a table on the way down. If I remember it correctly, but I don't know. There was a lot of drinking back then.
I was going to say,
no punches. It was mostly like a tackle and wrestle type scenario.
Yeah.
But he definitely, you know.
Yeah.
The carpenter
was
definitely
moves.
Stronger.
He had the moves. Yeah. Yeah. You may have had the size advantage, slight size advantage, but but it was the moves. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. You don't mess with the silver fox,
even
if you weren't silver at that point.
Yeah, no. If I recall, it was a very quick affair. It was a quick, and I think it was, I don't know. I remember it being sort of playful. I don't remember it being an actual anger.
No.
No punches, you know.
No, just
yeah.
Bad
boy.
Yeah, he did.
You're a bad boy.
Well, I don't even think I was 21 yet.
But I don't remember. It was a long time
ago. It was a long time ago, yeah.
I was going to ask you when I came in. If that was a gun in your pocket, if you were just happy to see me.
That story's in my list.
Well, okay. Well, now you, I don't know the story. So
after losing several fights,
I bought a gun.
I owned a gun and I have a permit to carry.
Sure.
There's certain times I do, certain times I wouldn't. But I was in the Providence Place Mall, and the behavior there had been going downhill a little bit. So I had it with me, and all of a sudden, I just feel this hand going in my back. It was a small 380 I carried right in my back pocket.
Uh-huh.
I just feel this hand going in, and I immediately, I reach around, I grab the hand, and I turn around, and it's
him. Oh, my God.
I had no idea.
No, he was pretending to take my wallet.
Yeah, just.
Oh, really? You didn't know what he was carrying?
No.
Oh, jeez.
And, I wasn't trying to actually get his wallet.
Yeah, yeah.
I was obvious.
Right,
know?
Right.
And
right.
Honestly, I wouldn't have panicked if it was my wallet. Wow. I just didn't want somebody reaching my pocket.
So what we're saying is there is a possibility that you almost could have possibly maybe shot the silver fox.
No, I would never, not for reaching in my pocket, right. But no matter what, that was not being taken out of my pocket by somebody else. That was for sure.
Next time I'll know that the left pocket has the wallet.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, go for the left.
Yep. It's now you're giving away all my secrets. But yeah, that was a pretty. Your face was priceless. I turn around. And he literally goes, "I didn't know."
Well, I didn't even know until you showed me. You go, "Well, this is what I was worried about."
Yeah, that's right. I was like, because you kind of looked at me like your reaction was weird. I'm like, "Well, look," and he's like, "Oh, I had no idea."
Yeah. That was fun.
I bet you never tried to pull that one again.
No.
Yeah.
And it was around that time that I was doing some project with the kids and I ended up with your daughter. I don't know, but the conversation was in Alan's basically like, "Oh, I think you're just fine. You'll be safe." With that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It ended up falling apart. We sent the kids to a movie. That was one of my favorite stories when I come out of there and I'm like, do your parents ever have to drive really fast to get to the ferry? Because I have to right now. We were late leaving the Providence Place Mall.
Oh,
yep. Oh, my gosh. That is. Ugh. How about any what were your interactions like with Nick DiPetrillo? So clearly you guys cross paths a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've told you this story that my favorite story about Nick, one of them anyway, was. Years ago when Dick Lemoy had been hired as chief of police.
Yep.
And he was hired on a one-year probationary period for whatever reason, I don't know. But at the end of the year, they were having a meeting to determine whether they're going to renew his contract. And it was a little controversial, again, for whatever reason, I don't know.
Yeah, it always is.
But they were expecting more people than the old town hall could handle, so they had it at the fire barn. And I couldn't go because I was tending bar at Packham's. But at the end of the night, in walks Nick, and I knew he'd been there. And I said, "Nick, how'd that meeting go?" And he said, 3/4 of the people there supported him. He says, if it wasn't 3/4, it was at least 3 out of 4. And then he said, and the other half just sat on their thumbs.
And the other half. Oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
It sounds like a Yogi Berraism, exactly. Basically. Like, oh, Nick.
Man.
Another time I remember, he was in the hospital. I think it was when he took off the ends of his fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Backhoe.
Yeah.
And I sent flowers to the nurses at the nurse's station. I said, "I know you're suffering more than he is."
No.
And he got back, he said, "The nurses loved your flowers." Asshole.
Asshole. Oh my gosh. I'm going to send flowers to the nurses. How do you come up with this stuff?
He was fun.
Nick was, like I said, I only met him a couple times, but he was the character of all characters.
I remember a great story with Kim Gaffin and, there was a line to get into the place. And Nat's in line, Nat Gaffin. He gets up to the door. There was a cover charge, whatever it was. He says to the guy at the door, "I'm Lou Gaffett's son." So they call Nick over. And he goes, "What's the matter with you? That's Lou Gafford's son. Let him in." So Kim is about four or five people back in the line. She gets up to the door and she says, "I'm Lou Gafford's daughter. Call Nick back over. Make her pay."
Oh, my God. So
he had just had that front area, just turf.
Yeah.
She rolled two lines out of the middle of the lawn, one under each arm, and walked out of there.
She stole the turf?
Yeah.
Kim did?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. Well, man. How late did the Monday Night Club go, or when did that dissolve?
It was only a couple of years, as I recall.
Yeah.
And the problem was that once they opened the Seacrest, they didn't really want the...
Yeah, makes sense.
...the bar next
but
to
it. But it moved over to Peckham's at that point, right?
Yeah, my recollection, and I think I'm right about this, Lou owned the building.
We'll swear you are.
But he didn't own the property. And he was going to move the building originally to across from Willis's garage, that lot that Les Slade owned. And when he couldn't move the liquor license there because of the church.
Church, yeah. It's the empty lot right across from West Side. What was West Side Service?
Kim Gaffett. Kim owns that still, doesn't she? I think
she never owned it. She leased it.
Oh, she leased that. So where the printing press shop, the printing shop was. Okay.
So that's when he built Peckham's. There was some downtime between the Monday Night Club
and then once
not a lot though, because like I said, he just built the foundation, opened the bar.
Opened the bar. And then he left Peckham, and then that's when Peckham's closed, he opened the Albion, right? Or what did those overlap?
They overlapped.
Okay.
And then that worked out for him too, the opening the bar, because most of the people working there, you know, ran tabs. So he was paying them pennies on the dollar. They'd come and pay their tabs, you know.
Yeah.
And building the building. In the back building, too. Yeah. You remember that guy? Who was on that crew? I'm trying to remember. Frosty. You remember that guy named Frosty?
I vaguely do.
Yeah. And, I barely remember that stuff. But, man. And Hilla, Ronnie's wife, was a bartender too, right?
Yep.
Was she a beachhead bartender as well?
She was a beachhead bartender.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to work for Adrian.
Oh, Nature Conservancy, working with Adrian Mitchell.
Well,
the road crew at the time. Yeah. That's right.
So did you, when your family, you raised your family out here as well? Were you... Did you end up back on the mainland?
I was back on the mainland. I came back out here. My wife was working for Disney, and her job kind of evaporated because they sold the publishing side of their business. And so I was looking for work, and I called Norris, and he said, "I got one house, but you're welcome to come and work on it." And I always had an ongoing thing with Norris about the, you know, he would have me doing things. I'd go like, "Can't you find a kid to do this? You know, what am I doing this?" So on that particular job, it was Norris, Ernie Oliver. You remember Ernie? Older guy, lived at the...
It rings a bell, yeah.
And myself. So the very first day on the job, this was at Mike Brunell's house. And we basically took that house down, saved the components and rebuilt it. So my first day there, I said, "What do you want me to do?" He says, "Why don't you crawl into that rat cellar and pull out all that insulation?" And I said, "Can't you get a kid to do that?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Bud, you are the kid."
You're it.
So, low man on the totem pole. Yeah. Hence why I had to stack all those 2x4s.
So you're still doing carpentry?
Still doing it.
Yeah. Are you still like doing are you doing more finish work now? Are you still doing it all?
So I was going to ask if you had a specialty, but you'll do finish or framing and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah. You solo now, or do you work for somebody?
I work
somebody?
With Jamie Johnson.
Oh, Jamie Johnson.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And we got a great crew.
Who else is working with you guys?
Pat Evans, and we just recently picked up Chris Robb because he worked for Doug Michelle for all those years.
And he's retired.
Yeah. Oh, that is a good crew.
Yeah, it's a great
crew. Yeah, really good guys. Yeah.
And we had a fellow, George, you know, the handyman George?
Yeah.
His son, George.
Oh, yes. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Didn't you work down at...
I did, at Nick's.
At Nick's,
yeah. With him, yeah.
But he went off to Colorado.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he went chasing a girl.
Oh.
That'll happen.
Well,
yeah. Sometimes.
Except I would hope you're chasing one warmer.
Yeah.
And getting colder.
But my family was out here after that.
Okay.
My daughter went to school here from fourth grade through ninth grade, I guess.
Yeah.
Good kid.
5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's terrific.
And I liked her.
Do they work out here or anything? Or did they ever like...
My wife worked at the paper. She did all the special publications for them, the wedding magazine, the Summertimes, the...
Oh, yeah.
Real estate magazine, all the various special publications.
Okay.
And then my daughter, you know, she did various things that young kids aren't
doing. That's right.
Yeah.
The summer jobs.
Yeah.
And then you refreshed, none of this is kind of random, but we were shooting a film that never got done, but we shot it in the middle of the winter in the National, as I've spoken of before. But Alan reminded me that he was a ghost. He played one of the sea captain ghost, right?
You must have recruited me. I can't remember how I got involved.
You have that look.
Yeah.
The New Englander.
Half
you know.
Dead, you mean.
No. The New Englander, fisherman look or, you know, captain look.
That's what it was, a fisherman ghost, right?
Yeah, the fisherman ghost, yeah. And a bunch of the kids were in it, too. There was like kids were ghosts and, you know, the haunted hotel.
The haunted hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was
fun.
Yeah, it was wild being in there in the winter, like, you know, all shut down. Yeah. Building whistles, like the whole thing would just sing, like, you know, just creepy. Yeah, we shot at the spring house too.
Yeah, I wasn't.
And I don't think you were there for that. No, I think we used the exterior of the spring house and the inside of the National paired together. And yeah, that's the stuff I don't remember at all.
What year was that, you think?
Oof, that had to be, I don't know, 10?
Oh, it's more than that.
More than that, 15 years ago? Probably.
I think more than that even.
It could be. I don't really know. I would go with that. I'll find out. We'll find out.
So I think it was before my daughter was born.
Do you still have the house, the family house?
No.
Or, okay.
No, my father sold that mid-80s, I guess.
All right. So do you have a place out here? Or you?
No, I have an apartment out here.
Okay, so you're renting a place.
Yeah.
How is it?
It's great.
It works?
Oh, it's terrific, yeah. I take care of a building, the main house, plus they own a building in town that I take care of.
All right. So that keeps a roof over your head, keeps you in the game?
It's a nice year-round place. It's a terrific spot. Nice.
Very rare.
Yeah.
Almost as rare as the Silver Fox himself.
I wouldn't be here if I didn't have that housing.
No camping anymore?
No.
I still keep my stuff under the porch over at the National.
Well, they tore that building down.
Yeah. So that went in. Erebus was 2014. So,
It's
actually only about 10 years ago. I know.
I would have sworn it was before my daughter was born. But...
No, because I think she was in there too, wasn't she?
I think she it was
Mary Conant, maybe.
Mary was definitely there. Yeah. And they were buddies. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they were both in there in that. Wow. Pan of the ghosts, the family of
that's actually now it's all coming back to me.
Here we go. We help each other. See, that's how this works.
You're just trying to make me look bad.
No, you've been hammering me. You remember this guy? Nope. You know this one? Nope. You remember when? Nope. It's all coming back to me, little by little.
And if you can't remember it, you can always just make it up, make something up. We do a lot of that.
Pretty much until we get called on it.
Right.
I love when we speak fact and then, like I did with the Cutting Cottages, like explaining to Mark all about how those, you know, those cottages are. And then Alan's like, you're wrong. Again. Oh, okay. I love when we do one show and then another guest comes on and like fixes it. Like, you guys were talking about this. That's not how
that's
it was.
I'm not going to do any of that.
Why not? No, please do. That's one of the fun things about it.
Here we go. No.
I don't remember anything specifically. I remember... I don't want to speak ill of the dead, But Dan Cahill was off on a few things.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, man. Yeah.
Like anybody ever, like anyone would care.
No, I know. And part of this, there's an endless supply of stories because if you get 10 people, you got 10 versions of the same
story. It's very true. It's very
true. Absolutely.
I also find that it's, you know, okay, this is going to sound stupid, but what I've learned is I watched a movie 25 years ago, right? And I think I know that movie inside out. And I'm like, you know what? What the heck? Let's put it on again. It is so different than I remember when I watched it 25 years ago. And I think it's true of our life, too. Like, we think we remember exactly how everything happened.
Oh, no.
But it's probably was very different. And therefore, each of our takes on that experience or that story is different, but it's not intentional.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely have been studies about, you know, how we retain information and even in the short term, forget long term, but even like, you know, if an incident happens, you saw, you know, a car hits another car and then takes off and there's witnesses and the police will ask, you know, what color was the car? How fast was it going? You know, even though all these people saw the same thing happen,
there's a gift of persuasion. Even if it can be collateral. So in other words, you know, if, you know, you say to someone, you know, remember 25 years ago when you stole that sandwich from that? Oh my God. Yeah. Why did I do that? Meanwhile, it never happened.
Right.
But you can persuade them to believe that they did do it because they either don't, you know,
they don't remember.
And the same people do that to each other. That's why they always separate you at the, you know,
right. When they're trying to get,
sure they get the best.
Like that time we were in the, well, we won't talk about that.
We said,
and luckily our stories matched up.
I want to hear more about Mark stealing the sandwich.
Oh my God.
Well,
it's funny you should mention.
We had a guest come in that we recorded earlier today. Can I show him?
Yes, please.
Do you know Mark's nickname was the Seagull?
I've heard that.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know the story a little bit behind it?
Yeah.
Well, it's only one. Two reasons I can think of to call somebody a seagull.
So our previous guest had these shirts made.
All right.
And he showed up.
Very good.
Yeah.
Marty Milner made those.
Milner. Yeah. Pretty funny stuff. Well, where are we at here?
Yeah,
what are you thinking?
We're getting close. I think we're...
Time flew by.
It really does, it always does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I never worry, but I always wonder how, you know, conversation's going to go. But man, you kicked it out of the park.
Do you have any last stories?
Anything you want to talk about?
Anything you want to throw out there before we sign off?
No, I plenty more stories, but.
Start writing them down. Come back again. I enjoyed a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are really great. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking time and sitting with us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah,
we really appreciate it because we know, you know, it's an inconvenience.
Not at all.
But great, great chatting with you and good stories. And once again, learned a lot about somebody I thought I knew.
Yep.
So, yeah. Well, listeners, thank you as well. Thanks for supporting our sponsors and listening to our podcast. And if you want to reach out, as always, with anything at all, questions, comments, requests, you know, just shoot us an email at twoguysonbi@gmail.com.
And make sure to follow us on the social media stuff, Facebook, Instagram, and wherever you listen to the podcast, hit the subscribe button and subscribe. And most importantly, just tell your friends.
Yes, that's it. We all need friends and they all need to listen to our podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks again, Alan and Mark. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
All right.
See ya. Hey, Rich.
What's up?
Would you like a cocktail?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to make you a Bloody Mary.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right, great.
I'm going to do the, it's called the McKay Bloody Mary.
Oh.
You're going to love it. Trust me.
I'm going to, let me just grab my Pepto-Bismol and toilet paper. I'm ready.
All right. I'll have them ready in a second. Oh, and one last thing. Whether you're a local or just visiting Block Island, pick up a copy of the Block Island Guide. Published annually for the last 35 years, it features 120 pages full of killer photos and all the details you need to know. Most importantly, it's fun to read. What shall we do with Chuck and Sailor? What shall we do with Chuck and Sailor? What shall we do?